My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be. To be.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking Spunks puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep. And when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience because Purple mattresses are made with a GelFlex grid. The GelFlex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips and support in others like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex Grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
It's 5 o'clock on the most listened to sports talk show for your ride home.
What?
It is time for
the Falcons Report.
Guns it. Caught. Touchdown Atlanta in the end zone. Caught. Touchdown. You shall not pass.
The 5 o'clock Falcons Report.
Oh, my heavens.
On Dukes and Bell.
We are Dukes and Bell. First day of July, which means we're like 3 weeks and a bit away from Falcons camp. How about that? We start every hour of every show with a big hearty, hey, man. My man, Carl Dukes. He was knocked out this morning, but he's back, and he's doing the job. Falcons, Carl. I mean, we're going to go round and round about the different positions. Chris did a good job, our producer, like, you know, giving us different areas to focus on today. Talking about Drake London. 41st in reception, 69th. Yep. 34th in receiving yards at 905. And here's the one that really hurts, and this isn't his fault. 113th in touchdowns.
Two. That's the issue. When you start talking about the top receivers in the league, whether it be the Cheetah, C.D. Lamb, or Amara St. Brown, all these guys are double-digit touchdown guys. And even the guys who are not, you start looking at the yardage, 1,300 for D.J. Moore in Chicago. Mike, these are all the guys that are at the top of the list. Again, a 1,000-yard season for Mike Evans. Amari Cooper had a great year in Cleveland. My thing is, Drake London can be as good as any of these guys. Nobody was talking about Nico Collins before C.J. Stroud got to Houston. See, you know, Nico Collins is a 1,200-yard guy, and you're going, wait a minute, where'd that come from? So I think he can be a top-10 receiver in this league this season. Is he going to put up 1,200 yards or more or have eight or more touchdowns? Because, Mike, that's what I think it's going to take.
We're going to talk plenty more, guys, about the Hawks this hour. We'll dive more into the moves that were made and hear what Landry Fields and one of our newest Hawks had to say. And, you know, we gauge your response. We'll open up the phone lines again for guys and ladies in their cars to talk about it. But it's just been, you know, I understand what they're trying to do, I think, with the Hawks. But are they going to get in the luxury tax? Sure don't sound like it. That's all coming up this hour. Focusing on the Falcons, as this hour of the show is brought to you by All Four Seasons Garage and Entry Doors. I just think Kirk Cousins makes him a 1,000-yard receiver and an 8 or 9 touchdown guy. I think the same goes for Pitts. I know you could argue, you know, offensively, considering we want to run the football and use play action. I mean, yeah, it's a nice problem to have, just like in 2016. Will there be enough footballs to go around?
You know what's interesting, Mike? I'm looking at George Pickens. And if you're a dog fan, you know, you follow Pickens at his career there with Georgia. And now he's with the Pittsburgh Steelers. George Pickens last year, with inadequate quarterback play, had over 1,100 yards and 5 touchdowns.
Right.
This is where Drake will be. With adequate quarterback play, where's he going to be with great quarterback play? So that is where you separate, like, the guys that are in the top 20, and you say he's a top 20 receiver, And then you say, okay, he's a difference maker. That, to me, it falls on the shoulders of, again, great quarterback play. And if you look at the guys at the top of this list, all right, and I'm not going in any particular order, but yes, you start talking about their quarterbacks and you start talking about the systems, or at least how they throw the football to these guys. And so I think Drake's going to have a great year, man. But yeah, I look at that and I go, Pickens, I think he's, you know, got a bright future. Mm. But remember who was throwing him the ball last year?
Yeah. Guy wearing two gloves.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you're going to have, now here's the thing though. We're going to get a taste of what, you know, Russell Wilson's all about. I mean, that's our first week. I mean, how does, you know, now look, I know everyone's, I love these memes guys send us, Arthur Smith is out for revenge. Okay, whatever. You know, I mean, you know he's going to dial up a gadget play. He can't help himself, but he does have a great quarterback in Russell Wilson.
No, that's a convenient narrative.
Come on, Art.
He does have, you know, he's got a great run game. I'm more concerned about us protecting Kirk Cousins against their pass rush than I am worried about what Arthur Smith's going to dream up.
I'll say this about the Steeler game specifically is Arthur doesn't have to do a whole lot, Mike. Not from the standpoint like they don't have to move the ball and score, but he doesn't have to do anything because their defense keeps them in games.
I mean, obviously, we need to score more points.
I'm talking about the Steelers defense, guys, and that's with or with Casey. I don't know what the situation is going to be there, but that's a championship caliber defense. And so if you're Arthur Smith, you're saying to yourself, I don't have to go out and be forced to score 30 points. I can put up 21 and we'll be in the game. That's how he should feel in every game with the Steelers defense. So I don't know what his approach is going to be. I know he'll be fired up to, you know, play the Falcons and come back because he feels like he should have got another year. And, you know, whether that would have happened or not, if he had better quarterback play, we'll never know. But I will say this. We have to put the pressure on them by being able to move the football early in that game and put them on their heels. Because, Mike, if we don't, that's going to change the whole way that game is called from Arthur Smith's standpoint, because he then is going to play ball control. Well, I'm going to run the football, right? We don't have to go out and score. I'm going to run the ball. We're going to move the clock. And we know, guys, with him being here, he's not afraid to run it 14 plays in a row.
Right.
He did it here.
And I know that with the Steelers, and I think Tomlin's happy to shorten the game, too, and shorten some necks, you know, with that style of
play. That's exactly right.
You know, it is a Dukes and Bell, guys, with our Falcon Report. We'll get into the Hawks, and we'll get your calls and talk about the moves that were made and how much more is to come. But right now, you know, as I said, you realize, bro, it's like, what, 25th, Chris? When's our first day of camp? Right? We're getting close.
I mean, 24th. We're like, 24th.
Yeah, so that's it. So do the 23 days, and then football will be here. And then we'll be able to report to you, usually live from Hooters up there in Mall of Georgia, and what we saw, and looking forward to seeing Kirk Cousins and these guys. And then as you and I were joking, Chris and I joked around about it on Thursday, Friday, the idea that you may just not get to see Kirk Cousins in, you know, in preseason. You're going to probably see Penix and Heineke in the preseason games on TV, and you're not going to have the access because, you know, when they do those scrimmages with teams, that's going to be closed to the fans.
Yeah, I don't know if it's good or bad. Not for fans, it's bad. I get that. I don't know if it's good or bad for the team, because I really think, Mike, there would be a lot of energy at those practices where fans are allowed to come. Now, I think they're going to have one at Mercedes-Benz, and, you know, they do that every year, and fans will be able to attend. But just up there at Flowery every day, you know, especially during, like, the start of camp, there's a lot of energy right now, you know, that the Falcons are getting. And I'm not talking about around the country. I'm just saying here locally, there's a lot of people excited. I keep running into people like, yo, I don't know what the Hawks are doing. I don't know what's going on here. The Braves kind of up and down. Man, I'm excited about the Falcons. That's what I keep getting.
That's what I love about the Falcons. I'm always ready for some positivity, especially on social media. Oh, wait. C-Beck at Young City smells like excuses. Talk about who DJ Moore had throwing him the ball. Players well, make it happen.
Well, that's the guy. Actually, listen, you can say, this is why I think the criticism of Justin Fields sometimes is overblown. Does he need to get better? Yes. Does he need to make better reads and release the ball quicker? I've said that the last 2 years. But that's a great example of, was he really as bad, or was the quarterback as bad as we think he was?
Well, I mean, look, I'm only concerned with the Falcons. Desmond Ridder was not ready for prime time.
No.
He just wasn't. And Heineke, unfortunately, we had higher hopes when he came in, and he was, unfortunately, not much better. He didn't – I'll give you this. I don't know if this is the Arthur Smith offense, because I was – you know, I'd seen enough of Ridder by 4 weeks. By week four, you know, we were arguing about get Ridder out of there. I thought that Heineke never looked at all like the one he was up in D.C. And is that a byproduct of the offense? Or guys like Pitts just weren't 100%, etc.
I thought the Tennessee game on the road where Heineke comes in at halftime and guys are turning and looking at us and looking, you know, everybody's looking at each other like, is he coming in for real? And he starts out with some flair, right? Things are popping. And then the game ends the way it does. And if you don't remember, there's a drop ball. We're moving the ball. We may have a chance to score and win the game, and it ends. And from like that point on, I just thought Heinicke didn't look or feel the same. He came into that game like, we're about to win, and you felt it. Like, he was throwing the ball well, we were moving the football. And then after that, when the job became his, I don't think it felt the same. That's just where I was with Heinicke.
Right. And on the flip side, on the defensive side of the ball, there was an article today at the Falcons website talking about Grady Jarrett and just everything. Basically, Carl, everything we've come to know and expect from Grady, you know, his entire career here in Atlanta, going back to when he was drafted in 15 out of the fifth round, and just how he's just basically chomping at the bit to get out there and be able to show these young bucks who he drafted what it's all about. And there's, you know how good he is. You know that he's certainly got something left in the tank. But we've talked about wasting Trey's prime time. It's been now going on 7 seasons the Falcons haven't been in the playoffs.
Yeah, I mean, he understands. I think, one, he appreciates what they did. I do. I think Grady wanted help defensively. He wanted to be, you know, get some guys that were more athletic and bigger and all the things that we talked about, and they did that. Can any of these guys really play? We're about to find out about the physicality of that once camp gets underway. But, Mike, they are all movable in the sense of, if I want to move a guy inside, outside, I want to use him on the edge, or I want him to do certain things in the pass rush, you can do that with all these guys. And I think Grady's excited about that aspect of it. When's the last time Grady looked up and he had this kind of potential talent on the D-line around him and they were all young?
Right. Now, we know that we've been asking that. It is really the eternal question for Falcon fans is, where's the beef? Where's the edge rush coming from? But there's certainly going to be a lot of playmakers. We hope they're going to develop. And we're going, again, the hope on this sell is what the Rams did and how hopefully Raheem Morris, similar input into what Fontenot did in the draft with these guys we picked up. Article, we didn't get a chance to talk about it last Thursday, but article at Falcon's website about Braylon Trice. He was considered an enforcer with the Huskies and a real tough guy and a dude that gets after it. And we've talked about one thing for sure we saw at the minicamp, the size and the length. Things you just have not had consistently on that as far as the playmakers on both defensive tackle and the edge rush.
Yeah, and that is something. We needed to get bigger. There was no doubt about that, but we needed to get more athletic. It's why the Calais Campbell signing should not have been a surprise, or not signing, should not have been a surprise to people. Love him, but you got to get younger and more athletic up front, and I think they did that.
I'm with you. Hey, man, there's your Falcon Report. We've been talking a lot about the Hawks today. Started the show because it's Carl's first chance to sign off. We were just getting off the air on Friday when the news broke. We had made the trade. Look, we knew that somebody had to go. Trey fans are happy it wasn't Trey. A lot of folks are looking at this going, okay. The good side of it would be, well, we're actually doing something to address the one of the worst defenses in the NBA. But where's some of the scoring coming from? Where's the size? And as Carl said, where's the sizzle? Where's the splash? So that's what we're talking about. Want to hear from you guys at 404-726-0929. What do you think about the Hawks' move so far? Now, we're going to give them the benefit of the doubt, huh? And feel, Carl, that this is a work in progress. And there will be more stuff coming. But what do you think where they are right now? What they've done over the weekend? Are you feeling warm and fuzzy? Or are you saying, same old Hawks? We'll talk about it next.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be. To be.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep. And when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience because Purple mattresses are made with a gel flex grid. The gel flex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips and support in others like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the gel flex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex Grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
Recovery from addiction can take many forms, and quite often, it's a team effort. For those in recovery, having support often leads to a better outcome. And for those supporting people in recovery, they celebrate every milestone. Here's to family, friends, loved ones, healthcare providers, and community groups who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. If you or someone you know is experiencing addiction, visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose to learn more about the various treatment options available.
Sometimes in football, you need just a little more for that first down. You need to be pushing the pile. And on our new podcast, we'll give you that extra effort.
I'm Mike Renner, a longtime NFL analyst who helped develop player evaluation systems that every NFL team uses to this day.
And I'm Kyle Long, former All-Pro offensive lineman in the NFL who knows a thing or two about getting people moving.
You'll get expertise from inside the trenches and behind the tape for 4 episodes every week. So make sure you download and subscribe to the Pushing the Pile podcast on the Odyssey.
The strong arm story of the day is brought to you by John Foyt Associates Personal Injury Law.
Big story today is the Hawks and the moves that were made, or in the minds of some Hawks fans, are not being made. We'll dive into that real quick, Carl. I don't know if you're watching back at your man cave at the ranch today, Portugal and Slovenia in the Euros. Cristiano Ronaldo and Lionel Messi, either you're a Messi guy, you're a Ronaldo guy around the world. He's having, let's just say, a really bad day on the world's greatest stage for the Euro Championship. Just missed a penalty kick. We're watching this going bananas. He's crying like a baby, Carl, as they're going into more extra time. And meanwhile, Messi's over here making more friends and, you know, cementing his legacy as one of the greats. If this is him exiting the world stage, boy, bro, Ronaldo looks like a hot mess today.
Wow. I've been watching, flipping back and forth, because obviously everybody, not everybody, soccer fans, right, are watching to see how this all shakes out. But no, I didn't see. He looked like crap, is what you're saying?
So far, he's missed. They've let him take every free kick, every shot. Orin, wow. Your 2 cents on this.
Yeah, at some point or another, they got to remember that there are other guys on the Portugal team. Like Ronaldo, yes. He might be Ronaldo, but at this point, Ronaldo isn't a very good Ronaldo. So maybe ease back a little bit, bud. Just other folks have a touch here.
Okay. I've always said I'll die on that hill. I think when you get to that level, I'll die on that mountain. I'll take Messi over Ronaldo any day of the week and twice on Sunday. But if they do go on to lose to Slovenia, it'll be something. Hey, man, we'll talk more about that top of the hour, because United had one of the craziest goals I think you've ever seen, Carl. That'll be coming up at 6. What was your first reaction when you heard about the DeJounte trade?
First, it had to be done. We had talked about this, Mike, for the last, I don't know, 2 seasons. I mean, since he got here, right? And I said from day one, they're the same player. They play very similar together, or, you know, like each other. Here's the deal for me, though, Mike. I don't understand this trade. And I'm not being a jerk here. I'm just telling you flat out. The Lakers have to miss the playoffs in 2025. And then if that happens, and it's not, the Hawks are going to acquire a lottery pick in a loaded 2025 NBA draft. But it's probably not going to be a lottery pick, because the Lakers are not going to fall apart. So that's one aspect that I keep hearing about. Oh, Dukes, they get the Lakers pick. Relax on that. Okay, we're trying to win now. Let's evaluate the players we got in return. Dyson Daniels, Mike, and Larry Nance Jr., you get 2 first-round picks. Here's the deal. Daniels could be a good defender, but he can't shoot, Mike. He can't score. He's a third-year guard that doesn't look to score. He's not. He doesn't have the vision of Trey or even DeJounte to be able to to acquire assists in a game like 10 or 11. So you're talking about a very limited guard. And Mike, he's been hurt. He missed 43 games in the first 2 seasons. He's 21, I get that, but he also suffered a torn meniscus this past season, which cost him the entire month of February and March. This is what you're getting in return. So then you say, well, Dukes and Bell, wait a minute, we're getting these picks. Well, you're just trying to replace the picks that you got taken for by the San Antonio Spurs.
You could argue with how again, you just made a great point. You know, even if Anthony Davis wears a suit half the year, which he usually does, I mean, LeBron and the Lakers are still going to probably be in the playoffs.
Yeah, playoffs.
So it's frustrating in that sense. Look, the trade never made. This is my beef. I mean, I got a bunch of guys, and again, I either you're just trade fans and you're just stoked to know that Trey is still here, and that's blinding, I guess, your breakdown of how this trade is, to Carl's point, may get us a whole lot of nothing. I mean, if Dyson Daniels becomes our version of a young Solomon Hill that was a big glue guy back in, you know, the 2021 run, okay. But you're right. There's nothing to dazzle you with the stats or what he's done so far. And then you bring it up. The picks, you made a really dumb move. It made no sense. You just touched on it. Two ball-dominant guards could not coexist, or Trey did decide that they wouldn't coexist because he never did what was supposed to be asked of him of Nate in the first place. And that coach Nate gets got. You bring in Quinn. Haven't played defense. So, yes, on paper, we're going to be better defensively. But, I mean, I'm just waiting to see this owner do something. I guess the logic continues to be we're not even close to competing, so I can't ever justify getting in to be one of the 10 or 11 teams that's in the luxury tax. Meanwhile, you got a fan base sitting here going, hey, you know, the clock is ticking, the meter is running, because when is Trey going to turn around and say, can I get some freaking help here? I mean, that's where it's at. Now, if you move on from – they don't re-sign Sadiq Bey. I mean, so I guess Bogey is safe for now then, right? So we still have some shooting.
Yeah, Bogey's safe. It's
Garrison
AJ,
Matthews is going to get more minutes. And, I get it. When he got on the floor, he was hitting a ton of three-point shots last year.
No, listen, Garrison can shoot. There's no doubt about it. Garrison is just kind of one of these – unknown commodities that is, you know, may turn into a very good player here in the NBA. We're still not quite sure. But when he got minutes and run, he made the most of it last year. But I want to just one second, Mike, to talk about these picks, because this is the other part that I keep hearing from Hawks fans. Dukes, man, we get these picks back. We look at this, we're going to get the lesser of the Pelicans and Bucks picks for 2027. The lesser. So both teams are not going anywhere. The Pelicans right now with DeJounte Murray, Michael, one of the best defensive teams in the league. They were without him last year. I think they'll be better this year. They were like the sixth best defensive efficiency team in the league. They're going to be there. So are the Bucks as long as Giannis is there. The point is both teams are going to be good. That means those picks that we have landed that you are all excited about is going to be somewhere in the get yourself ready low to mid 20s.
Right.
That doesn't help us.
In a draft where you don't even know the guys outside of the top 10.
And then we still owe picks, Hawks fans, to the Spurs in 25 and 27 for acquiring DJ 2 years ago. And, oh, by the way, we got a swap situation in 26. Are you following me on this? What is this trade?
It's getting you under the luxury tax. You know, again, most likely not going to keep. Or no, they get, if Sadiq Bey tests free agency, which he will, and doesn't get traction, perhaps you can bring him back for less, but they're still not going to give him a – I mean, to me, it's all about the dollars. We're just not willing to spend the money. So we're going to go with a Trey and hope that Jalen Johnson continues to develop. By the way, Zachary, let's play the sound from the other day when he was out there at Emory. We had a nice conversation ourselves, Chris and I, on Thursday with Zachary Versace. You know, and he's going to work in it, but it's like you can't expect him. You think he's coming in to give you 17 a night? That's not part of this equation. Here's Zach, though. He doesn't feel the pressure of being the first guy.
I feel like there is no pressure. I just realize my dream, and I need, like, I just focus on the good stuff, you know, on the right stuff, which is playing here. So I'm just excited to be a Hawks right now, and I want to compete and win games. So that's all that's all it matters right now.
Told us that Durant was his favorite player as a kid, and, you know, folks, you know, he takes pride in obviously getting better on defense, getting better in every aspect of his game. He's a likable young guy. Some throw out the first pitch, by the way, not bad for a 6'8" French guy, right?
No, not
considering throwing the baseball overhand is not a natural motion anywhere outside of America or the Caribbean. But no, it's funny. Years ago, when I lived in Midtown, we had our buddy Christophe, who's from Nice, France, and we taught him how to throw a football. Carl, it's a process, just like throwing a baseball. One more from Landry Fields. Okay, we didn't really do anything in the trade. Now, again, color me stupid. Feel free to take your pot shots. I just thought maybe in some world, and you brought this up last week, you thought it was too difficult to get Brandon Ingram in here. I thought maybe we could use that exception from the John Collins trade towards helping to mitigate that, right? Didn't happen. Here's Landry Fields. What are you looking for in free agency?
Address some of it in the draft, like size and some defensive stuff that we wanted to shore up, and always welcome shooting to the group. So defense and shooting will work well here.
Ingram is he's entering the final year of his contract.
Well, that would require us having to give a contract. To give him you have to restructure and give him a new deal.
So, he wants a long-term deal. He wants a max deal that the Pelicans, Mike, they're not going to give it to him. This is why it hasn't happened, okay? So you look at the deals today, and if you're just joining us here, Klay Thompson is going to the Mavs. The run with the Warriors is over, but I thought it was over 2 years ago. But nevertheless, Klay goes to the Mavs for 3 years, $50 million. That's one of the big signings. Obviously, the other one had to do with the 76ers re-signing their own, and Maxey, who gets a $204 million deal, and then Paul George going there for 4 years. But this is interesting only because they're hesitant to give him this deal, and this is why I said he may be available, but you just did a trade with the Pelicans. I don't think it's likely that you turn right back around and do another deal now that this deal's been done, but that's part of what the Ingram situation is. And if you were to tell me, hey, this is what we're going to do, maybe it's a three-team, you know, trade or something of that nature, Mike, and we get in, if you put Ingram on this team now, now we're doing something. Like, now I feel better about where the scoring is going to come from, because here's the deal. I get it. Trey's going to get his. But, guys, you saw it in the finals. Luka can do all the things.
Got to have help.
You got to have help, man. So where is that coming from? And that is the part right now where I go, is that Jalen Johnson? Are you telling me Jalen's going to become a 25-point a game, you know, a night guy? Is, you know, I don't even want to talk about Hunter because we've seen that. Yeah.
He's exasperating because he's so inconsistent.
So who's that? Who's going to become that 25-point, 27-point guy to follow in Trey, you know, with Trey on this team that we currently have?
I mean, look, we all love Jalen Johnson. What did you say last a few months ago? Get some shoes.
He's
got to be able to make a – he's got to be – look, we're loving this. We haven't even hit the ceiling on Jalen Johnson, but he's got to be able to stay durable, man. We don't need another guy to miss a bunch of games on this team. The other thing that happened today, we mentioned some of the moves that went down. The Sixers in our conference, they make, you know, the signing with Paul George, so he goes to play. You know, that's a pretty solid line. All of a sudden, the Sixers immediately go right up in the top three in the Eastern Conference. Caldwell Pope to the Magic. Tobias Harris going to Detroit. The Beard, by the way, staying with the Clippers. Chris Paul is going to San Antonio. So Castle will watch him, or at least help out in Castle development down there.
Stephon Castle's a baller, man. I really like his game. I think he's going to be good, but this is a smart move. And for Chris Paul, man, he's on the tail end. He loves Pop. They have a good relationship. Go play there and mentor, you know, Castle. That's a nice deal. And he gets to help Wimby. I mean, you need these veteran dudes around you. So for him, that's a nice move, man.
A lot of dudes are hitting us up on the text line. They say, again, the first wave of people, well, those guys are watching Judge Judy, Carl. That was at 2 o'clock. The second wave of listeners feel that, yes, they're not impressed with the moves, and it just simply looks like pure cost-cutting and just hoping that the things we just talked about, Jalen Johnson will be a rock star this year with Trae Young.
I hope so. I hope so.
And that, you know, that Dyson Daniels will be the defensive stopper that we've been missing. Although, as you brought up some great points, you know, doesn't really stay healthy, and he's still relatively young in the league.
He don't score, man. I'm just telling you guys.
He doesn't.
Like, he doesn't score.
Hey, man. We'll be rocking and rolling with our man, G-Mac, Grant McCauley. You and I get nervous when Schwellenbach pitches. I think he gave you some good stuff yesterday. But the Braves now 1-5 when Schwellenbach takes the mound. Talk about what happened with the Pirates as we get ready for the Giants. We'll talk to Grant McCauley next on Dukes and Bell.
Time for Around the Yard with your Atlanta Braves on Dukes and Bell. Brought to you by Mark Spain Real Estate. Get a guaranteed offer on your home today.
He gets greeted rudely by Ronald Acuna Jr. It is gone!
Sports Radio 92.9, The Game.
Hey, man, it was a good weekend, especially for those who braved the heat, Carl, at Truist Park. To watch the Bravos take 2 out of 3 from the Bucks, including what was an electric atmosphere with Skeens and how about Kelnick, man? That was pretty neat, but Skeens going up against Max Fried. Our man, Grant McCauley, joins us right here on the WadeFord.com hotline. What do you think of the series against Pittsburgh?
Yeah, I thought it was, you know, a step in the right direction for the Braves. I mean, they definitely needed to win series on this homestand, get themselves really lined up for what's going to be a showdown with the Philadelphia Phillies that will begin this weekend, but you can't overlook anybody. And I thought that, you know, getting a little offense going on Friday was good. Just enough runs on Saturday was good. Obviously, the pitching matchup kind of took center stage. And yeah, coming up a little bit short, though, on Sunday, you just kind of helped come out of the series wondering a little bit, can they find a consistency? I think that's probably the overriding thing I talked about from the diamond yesterday was just, you know, we've seen flashes of it, but when are they really going to hit their stride for an extended run?
My guess is you probably, just guessing here, I mean, I could be wrong, but I doubt it, that you spent a lot of time, Grant, on, what's his name? Oh, Kelnick.
Mm-hmm.
I'm guessing you spent a lot of time on
it. Yeah, Chris, Kelnick did it.
I did. I've been talking quite a bit about Jared Kelenic on the show, no less, over the last probably couple of months, really all season long, just because I felt like from a talent perspective, there was an opportunity there. And that's what the Braves saw when they acquired this guy. And now we're seeing, and nobody loves the circumstances of Jared Kelenic becoming the Braves leadoff hitter because of what it took to get it there.
For sure. Yeah.
But everybody's loving the production that you're seeing from him. He's batting over 300, nearly 330 out of the leadoff spot with a 900 OPS. He's been hitting well over 300 for over a month now.
Huh.
The power has shown up. He's doing the things that you were hoping that you'd see out of Jared Kelenic. That's a long season. There can be highs and there can be lows, and we've seen a little bit of both for him. And over the course of his career, he's no stranger to both of those things, but it's certainly it's well-timed because the Braves need some guys to step up, and Jared Kelenic, alongside really Austin Riley here lately, have been the guys that have really stepped up for this club.
You know, I hate when guys rush to judgment over a player, Carl, don't you? You got to let things percolate, evolve.
I hate it, Mike. I really do.
You know what? Matter of fact, Oren, let's hear that great home run call, as we heard it on Bally Sports. For those who do have Bally Sports, when we heard that that rocket off the bat of Kelenic.
Kelenic turns on this and sends it to the chop house, greeting Paul Skeens pretty rudely. It's 1-0 Atlanta.
I mean, I know we talk about exit velocity and everything, but how about the speed in and speed out on that one, Grant?
Well, no doubt. And I was just thinking as we were coming into the segment and we've got our little bumper, it's got Ronald Acuna Jr. and that for good reason, but maybe we need the new Braves leadoff hitter to be the featured highlight for the intro-outro for the segment here. I don't know. But
no, you know what? You make a great point. We're going to make that happen, Grant.
Right.
Great job. Great point.
I know. I think we do. It's now, and we'll call it the Kelenic opener in honor of Kelenic. It is Grant McCullough. For those who aren't catching the drift, Chris, because when we had a really bad start for Kelenic in spring training, Chris, and I was in on it too. We were joking around, this guy's a bum. What is this guy? Who is this guy? And now he looks like the answer, certainly at leadoff. Grant, getting to the pitching, I had the number today. I've been telling Carl all day. Schwellenbach, I know he's learning his way in the show, and it was a pretty, you know, decent start for him, but they're just not winning the games he's starting. They're 1-5 when Spencer Schwellenbach starts.
Yeah, and I think that part of that, you can certainly point to some of the inexperience that goes into that, and it is a learning curve, and I think we do have to look and see that this is a kid that even at 24 years old, a little bit older than some of the other pitching prospects that they brought up, still fewer than, 100 professional innings coming into the season. So there's a lot of on-the-job training that's happening here. I do like what I see from him. I do like that pitch arsenal that he has. But when you make mistakes at the big league level, a lot of times you're going to pay for him. O'Neill Cruz and Rowdy Tellez certainly made Spencer Schwellenbach pay yesterday. But I feel like, as we've talked about a lot of different things, that if you had an offense that you really could count on, Spencer Schwellenbach, save the one start in Boston, really hasn't allowed an outing to just get completely out of hand. He's had one poor start at the big league level, what I would call a truly poor start, in which you just kind of, you know, have to, you know, look at it and maybe learn from it and move on. And I think that he's done a nice job of evolving as he's gone along in each one of his starts as well. But, you know, again, I think they're going to look for different ways to solve that fifth starter spot, maybe even, you know, utilizing a sixth starter from time to time as they need it. And I think Spencer Schwellenbach can still be one of the answers there, but there will be some growing pains, most certainly, for a young pitcher who's just now making his way through the big leagues. And I talked about this on From the Diamond yesterday. I've talked to a lot of guys over the years. I mean, major league executives, major league managers, just longtime veterans. It takes about 30 or 35 starts before you really know what you've got from a young starting pitcher in the big leagues. And Spencer Schwellenbach is nowhere close to that.
Are we taking what we're seeing again from Max Fried for granted? I thought he was great again on Saturday.
No, he was, and that's just kind of Max Fried's – that's just his M.O. That's what he does, and I know that every once in a while he has a bad one. We saw him start off the year with a couple of starts that he'd like to have a do-over for, I'm sure. But what he did is what all the great ones do. They buckle down, they get back to work, and they make the most of their next opportunity, their next outing. And I feel like Max has got such just a complete arsenal that he – you know, mixes his pitches, uses six different offerings, which I think is incredibly impressive for a young pitcher that I saw that was basically a fastball, curveball pitcher, maybe looking for that third pitch to get some consistency, maybe dabbling with a changeup. And all of a sudden, I mean, he can give a lineup so many different looks. I think that's one of the things that helps him avoid going into, you know, stretches where he just can't find a way to get outs. But, yeah, Max Fried, and especially in the absence of Spencer Strider, has stepped up big time. He's been who we've seen year after year, and the Braves have needed every bit of it.
Grant, we met some Pirates fans the other day. We're doing the show at Twin Peaks in Buckhead. Is this the time that they're finally going to keep some guys and actually build on all the young stars they've added?
You know, I'd like to tell you the answer to that is yes, but if I said that, it may not necessarily line up with what the Pirates' MO has been, unfortunately, and that is to allow these guys to maybe grow, establish themselves a little bit, and then more times than not, end up being traded off. But there's no question that they're in a pretty nice spot here where they have produced, especially from the starting pitching side, led by Paul Skenes and Jared Jones. If O'Neill Cruz can put some things together, I mean, that guy, we saw it on Sunday. He's as powerful as anybody in baseball. Rocket arm, shortstop, really great athlete. You know, got to cut down on the strikeouts, which is a story for a lot of young hitters. But he's a five-tool talent, and those are the kind of guys that you want to be stockpiling, especially if you're a club like the Pirates is trying to find its way, kind of wandering through the wilderness to find a winning season again. They've been more competitive this year than they have been in years past, and that young, you know, that youth movement that they've got going on is a big part of that.
Grant, let's preview what's coming up with the Giants. Tell us about these guys.
Well, the Giants, I feel like, are another club that's kind of underperformed this year. I talked about this a lot on From the Diamond yesterday with some of the big money that they spent in the offseason. They signed Jorge Soler. He struggled this year, batting .230. You know, they went out and got a big outfielder from Korea who was supposed to be a superstar for them on a $100-plus million contract. He's had to get his shoulder reconstructed, so he's out. Blake Snell, the National League Cy Young Award winner last year, has a groin strain. He's been out. Matt Chapman's pretty much been Matt Chapman, which is to say a great fielder with some streakiness at the plate. But all of these guys were kind of designed to bring an influx of talent in that might put the Giants over the top and really propel them into the National League West race and obviously into the wild card as well, which there aren't too many teams that are out of it in the wild card, and the Giants aren't out of it, but they're just having trouble even finding their way to .500. And we'll see what the Braves are able to do on or in a matchup that should favor them on paper, but as I've joked many times this year, the game is not played on paper. You just got to figure out ways to win series, and the Braves have another opportunity right here as they move through this series into the Phillies to have a little bit of momentum on their side.
Hey, we'll talk injuries real quick, Grant, before we cut you loose. What's the story with Michael Money Harris? Any idea when we'll see him?
No, there's still no timeline. I know he's doing those baseball activities, but until he goes out and runs, I mean, you really can't set a definitive date on sending him on a rehab assignment. I mean, is it progress that he's out hitting and throwing? Yes, it absolutely is. But until he's able to kind of open it up, run the bases, really test this whole thing out, and obviously he'll do a lot of things before he gets on the bases, that's when you'll really start to know. This hamstring strain, I think we're kind of looking at it thinking, probably going to be a month, including a rehab assignment, at least. The Braves have been, you know, very reluctant to put a timetable on it. We're definitely, in my opinion, let's say that, rather than we're definitely, but in my opinion, we're looking at a second-half return. Could be close to the trade deadline, hopefully sooner. It all depends on how Michael Harris responds.
Ian Anderson threw three scoreless innings in Class A over the weekend. What do you think as far as his timetable?
Yeah, I mean, great first step, and I think it always has been about getting Ian back sometime right around the trade deadline, and that looks like what it's going to line up for is the final week of July. He should be eligible, if all goes well, and every fifth day he's able to make that progress, to be back in there and be an option for the Braves at the back end of that rotation. And you talk about somebody who's been there and done that. Anderson was kind of baptized by fire in 2020, made himself quite a postseason name in that season, and then in 2021. It would be nice to have somebody with that kind of experience back, and you always pull for that comeback. And three innings, 46 pitches, 29 strikes. We'll see if he's able to build on that next time out. I know down in the Florida Complex League, that fastball, 93 to 95, that'll certainly work. His changeup is his dynamic pitch. And we'll just see if he can just continue to check all those boxes and hopefully rejoin the Braves in the second half.
All right, big man. That's Grant McCauley. And again, the Phillies, by the way, they split. They had a really tight series with the Marlins, Carl. A lot of close games in that one. We won't see with the injuries, right, with Bryce Harper out and Schwarber. So they will be out when we see them, guys, right? Grant, they won't be available.
Yeah, and Romuto is also out. So that's three big bats and three big names for the Phillies they won't have.
Cool. All right, big man, we will talk to you tomorrow, hopefully about a Braves win against San Francisco. It is Dukes and Bell. This hour of the show brought to you by All Four Seasons Garage and Entry Doors. Carl's back at the ranch. I know I was telling Carl earlier, me, Oren, Chris, during the commercial break, some really high drama in the Euros. I know not everybody's a soccer fan, but man, if you are, holy moly, you got one of the most identifiable athletes, Carl, on the planet, having the worst day of his life. And crying like a baby on the net.
You crying
on a worldwide stage. Further proof that Messi.
It's time for Around the Yard with your Atlanta Braves on Dukes and Bell. Brought to you by Mark Spain Real Estate. Get a guaranteed offer on your home today.
He gets greeted rudely by Ronald Acuna Jr. It is gone.
Sports Radio 92.9, The Game.
Hey, man, it was a good weekend, especially for those who braved the heat, Carl, at Truist Park. To watch the Bravos take 2 out of 3 from the Bucks, including what was an electric atmosphere with Skeens and how about Kelnick, man? That was pretty neat, but Skeens going up against Max Fried. Our man, Grant McCauley, joins us right here on the WadeFord.com hotline. What do you think of the series against Pittsburgh?
Yeah, I thought it was, you know, a step in the right direction for the Braves. I mean, they definitely needed to win series on this homestand, get themselves really lined up for what's going to be a showdown with the Philadelphia Phillies that will begin this weekend, but you can't overlook anybody. And I thought that, you know, getting a little offense going on Friday was good. Just enough runs on Saturday was good. But obviously, the pitching matchup kind of took center stage. And yeah, coming up a little bit short, though, on Sunday, you just kind of helped come out of the series wondering a little bit, can they find the consistency? I think that's probably the overriding thing I talked about from the diamond yesterday was just, you know, we've seen flashes of it, but when are they really going to hit their stride for an extended run?
My guess is you probably, just guessing here, I mean, I could be wrong, but I doubt it, that you spent a lot of time, Grant, on, what's his name? Oh, Kelnick.
Mm-hmm.
I'm guessing you spent a lot of time on
it. Yeah, Chris, Kelnick did it.
I did. I've been talking quite a bit about Jared Kelnick on the show, no less, over the last probably couple of months, really all season long, just because I felt like from a talent perspective, there was an opportunity there, and that's what the Braves saw when they acquired this guy, and now we're seeing. And nobody loves the circumstances of Jared Kelnick becoming the Braves' leadoff hitter because of what it took to get it there.
For sure. Yeah.
But everybody's loving the production that you're seeing from him. He's batting over 300, nearly 330 out of the leadoff spot with a 900 OPS. He's been hitting well over 300 for over a month now. Huh. The power has shown up. He's doing the things that you were hoping that you'd see out of Jared Kelnick. That's a long season. There can be highs and there can be lows, and we've seen a little bit of both for him. And over the course of his career, he's no stranger to both of those things. But it's certainly it's well timed because the Braves need some guys to step up, and Jared Kelnick, alongside really Austin Riley here lately, have been the guys that have really stepped up for this club.
You know, I hate when guys rush to judgment over a player, Carl. Don't you? You got to let things percolate, evolve.
I hate it, Mike. I really do.
You know what? Matter of fact, Oren, let's hear that great home run call. As we heard it on Bally Sports, for those who do have Bally Sports, when we heard that rocket off the bat of Kelnick.
Kelnick turns on this and sends it to the Chop House, greeting Paul Skeens pretty rudely. It's 1-0 Atlanta.
I mean, I know we talk about exit velocity and everything, but how about the speed in and speed out on that one, Grant?
Well, no doubt. And I was just thinking as we were coming into the segment and we've got our little bumper, it's got Ronald Acuna Jr. and that for good reason, but maybe we need the new Braves leadoff hitter to be the featured highlight for the intro outro for the segment here. I don't know. But
no, you know what? You make a great point. We're going to make that happen, Grant.
Right.
Great job. Great point.
I know. I think we do. It's now, and we'll call it the Kelnick opener in honor of Kelnick. It is Grant McCauley. For those who aren't catching the drift, Chris, because when we had a really bad start for Kelnick in spring training, Chris, and I was in on it too. We were joking around, this guy's a bum. What is this guy? Who is this guy? And now he looks like the answer, certainly at leadoff. Grant, getting to the pitching, I had the number today. I've been telling Carl all day. Schwellenbach, I know he's learning his way in the show, and it was a pretty, you know, decent start for him, but they're just not winning the games he's starting. They're 1-5 when Spencer Schwellenbach starts.
Yeah, and I think that part of that, you can certainly point to some of the inexperience that goes into that, and it is a learning curve, and I think we do have to look and see that this is a kid that even at 24 years old, a little bit older than some of the other pitching prospects that they brought up, still fewer than, 100 professional innings coming into the season. So there's a lot of on-the-job training that's happening here. I do like what I see from him. I do like that pitch arsenal that he has. But when you make mistakes at the big league level, a lot of times you're going to pay for them. O'Neill Cruz and Rowdy Tellez certainly made Spencer Schwellenbach pay yesterday. But I feel like, as we've talked about a lot of different things, that if you had an offense that you really could count on, Spencer Schwellenbach, say the one start in Boston, really hasn't allowed an outing to just get completely out of hand. He's had one poor start at the big league level, what I would call a truly poor start, in which you just kind of, you know, have to, you know, look at it and maybe learn from it and move on. And I think that he's done a nice job of evolving as he's gone along in each one of his starts as well. But, you know, again, I think they're going to look for different ways to solve that fifth starter spot, maybe even, you know, utilizing a sixth starter from time to time as they need it. And I think Spencer Schwellenbach can still be one of the answers there, but there will be some growing pains, most certainly, for a young pitcher who's just now making his way through the big leagues. And I talked about this on From the Diamond yesterday. I've talked to a lot of guys over the years. I mean, major league executives, major league managers, just longtime veterans. it takes about 30 or 35 starts before you really know what you've got from a young starting pitcher in the big leagues, and Spencer Schwalbach is nowhere close to that.
Are we taking what we're seeing again from Max Fried for granted? I thought he was great again on Saturday.
No, he was, and that's just kind of Max Fried's – that's just his M.O. That's what he does, and I know that every once in a while he has a bad one. We saw him start out the year with a couple of starts that he'd like to have a do-over for, I'm sure. But what he did is what all the great ones do. They buckle down, they get back to work, and they make the most of their next opportunity, their next outing. And I feel like Max has got such just a complete arsenal that he – you know, mixes his pitches, uses six different offerings, which I think is incredibly impressive for a young pitcher that I saw that was basically a fastball, curveball pitcher, maybe looking for that third pitch to get some consistency, maybe dabbling with a changeup. And all of a sudden, I mean, he can give a lineup so many different looks. I think that's one of the things that helps him avoid going into, you know, stretches where he just can't find a way to get outs. But, yeah, Max Fried, and especially in the absence of Spencer Strider, has stepped up big time. He's been who we've seen year after year, and the Braves have needed every bit of it.
Grant, we met some Pirates fans the other day. We're doing the show at Twin Peaks in Buckhead. Is this the time that they're finally going to keep some guys and actually build on all the young stars they've added?
You know, I'd like to tell you the answer to that is yes, but if I said that, it may not necessarily line up with what the Pirates' MO has been, unfortunately, and that is to allow these guys to maybe grow, establish themselves a little bit, and then more times than not, end up being traded off. But there's no question that they're in a pretty nice spot here where they have produced, especially from the starting pitching side, led by Paul Skenes and Jared Jones. If O'Neill Cruz can put some things together, I mean, that guy, we saw it on Sunday. He's as powerful as anybody in baseball. Rocket arm, shortstop, really great athlete. You know, got to cut down on the strikeouts, which is a story for a lot of young hitters. But he's a five-tool talent, and those are the kind of guys that you want to be stockpiling, especially if you're a club like the Pirates is trying to find its way, kind of wandering through the wilderness to find a winning season again. They've been more competitive this year than they have been in years past, and that young, you know, that youth movement that they've got going on is a big part of that.
Grant, let's preview what's coming up with the Giants. Tell us about these guys.
Well, the Giants, I feel like, are another club that's kind of underperformed this year. I talked about this a lot on From the Diamond yesterday with some of the big money that they spend in the offseason. They signed Jorge Soler. He struggled this year, batting .230. You know, they went out and got a big outfielder from Korea who was supposed to be a superstar for them on a $100-plus million contract. He's had to get his shoulder reconstructed, so he's out. Blake Snell, the National League Cy Young Award winner last year, has a groin strain. He's been out. Matt Chapman's pretty much been Matt Chapman, which is to say a great fielder with some streakiness at the plate. But all of these guys were kind of designed to bring an influx of talent in that might put the Giants over the top and really propel them into the National League West race and obviously into the wild card as well, which there aren't too many teams that are out of it in the wild card, and the Giants aren't out of it, but they're just having trouble even finding their way to .500. And we'll see what the Braves are able to do on or in a matchup that should favor them on paper, but as I've joked many times this year, the game is not played on paper. You just got to figure out ways to win series, and the Braves have another opportunity right here as they move through this series into the Phillies to have a little bit of momentum on their side.
Hey, we'll talk injuries real quick, Grant, before we cut you loose. What's the story with Michael Money Harris? Any idea when we'll see him?
No, there's still no timeline. I know he's doing those baseball activities, but until he goes out and runs, I mean, you really can't set a definitive date on sending him on a rehab assignment. I mean, is it progress that he's out hitting and throwing? Yes, it absolutely is. But until he's able to kind of open it up, run the bases, really test this whole thing out, and obviously he'll do a lot of things before he gets on the bases, that's when you'll really start to know. This hamstring strain, I think we're kind of looking at it thinking, probably going to be a month, including a rehab assignment, at least. The Braves have been, you know, very reluctant to put a timetable on it. We're definitely, in my opinion, let's say that, rather than we're definitely, but in my opinion, we're looking at a second-half return. Could be close to the trade deadline, hopefully sooner. It all depends on how Michael Harris responds.
Ian Anderson threw three scoreless innings in Class A over the weekend. What do you think as far as his timetable?
Yeah, I mean, great first step, and I think it always has been about getting Ian back sometime right around the trade deadline, and that looks like what it's going to line up for is the final week of July. He should be eligible, if all goes well, and every fifth day he's able to make that progress, to be back in there and be an option for the Braves at the back end of that rotation. And you talk about somebody who's been there and done that. Anderson was kind of baptized by fire in 2020, made himself quite a postseason name in that season, and then in 2021. It would be nice to have somebody with that kind of experience back, and you always pull for that comeback. And three innings, 46 pitches, 29 strikes, we'll see if he's able to build on that next time out. I know down in the Florida Complex League, that fastball, 93 to 95, that'll certainly work. His changeup is his dynamic pitch. And we'll just see if he can just continue to check all those boxes and hopefully rejoin the Braves in the second half.
All right, big man. That's Grant McCauley. And again, the Phillies, by the way, they split. They had a really tight series with the Marlins, Carl. A lot of close games in that one. We won't see with the injuries, right, with Bryce Harper out and Schwarber. So they will be out when we see them, guys, right? Grant, though, they won't be available.
Yeah, and Romuto is also out. So right. That's three big bats and three big names for the Phillies they won't have.
Cool. All right, big man, we will talk to you tomorrow, hopefully about a Braves win against San Francisco. It is Dukes and Bell. This hour of the show brought to you by All Four Seasons Garage and Entry Doors. Carl's back at the ranch. I know I was telling Carl earlier, me, Oren, Chris, during the commercial break, some really high drama in the Euros. I know not everybody's a soccer fan, but man, if you are, holy moly, you got one of the most identifiable athletes, Carl, on the planet, having the worst day of his life. And crying like a baby.
You crying
on a worldwide stage. Further proof that Messi is better than Ronaldo. We'll come back because we've got a do or die match for the USA. We'll give you the story on that against Uruguay as part of the top three coming up on Dukes and Bell.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be. To be.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking Spunks puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
In life, some days are good and some could be better. The same is true for recovery. Both take work, both take adjustments. Finding your path is a key part of your journey. And then it's all about walking it every day. Embrace the good days, the not so good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Be open to every part of the journey and welcome it. It's unique and it's all part of you. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
Sometimes in football, you need just a little more for that first down. You need to be pushing the pile. And on our new podcast, we'll give you that extra effort.
I'm Mike Renner, a longtime NFL analyst who helped develop player evaluation systems that every NFL team uses to this day.
And I'm Kyle Long, former All-Pro offensive lineman in the NFL who knows a thing or two about getting people moving.
You'll get expertise from inside the trenches and behind the tape for 4 episodes every week. So make sure you download and subscribe to the Pushing the Pile podcast on the Odyssey app.